This is Rackadix After Hours.
We are back. Thank you for bearing with us during our brief absence from the airwaves. You're listening to Rack Addicts After Hours, this time with three addicts of the rack. Peter's here, my name's Ben, and we are joined once again by Mark, who you might have heard about 100 episodes ago, or thereabouts, and we're going to do some music, we're going to do some technology, and have a chat. But first, we must find out what's been going on in Mark's life in the past 100-ish episodes. We must check in, of course. What is in the next batch that you're going to be shipping home? Any musical, technological goodies going that way?
Thank you for having me back on it.
Of course.
It's lovely to be back. The next shipment that's finding its way out to Sofia, which is where I live now, is a studio chair, which has been residing at my mum's house for a bit, which is very comfortable and needs to be in my studio.
Could it be the fabled, not Koenig and Meyer, isn't it? Herman Miller, that's the one. Is it a
No, they're not as posh as that. Ooh. It's not as posh as that. No, it's an Amazon job. It needs to be with me in my studio. So that's making its way out there, as well as a new set of speakers for our DJ setup, which I bought for my girlfriend for her birthday, as well as some condiments. So some Marmite and lots of new shower gels and some tea bags. So it's all very exciting stuff. So that's the next consignment that's heading over to Sofia in the next couple of days, hopefully.
Brilliant. And it seems like you have the ultimate taste in speakers. Adams, I believe.
Yeah, I bought the Adams ones from Pete's recommendation.
Delicious.
We were thinking about getting the Yamaha ones, but Pete said, no. Most people make that.
Would you like
mistake.
Some low end at all?
So we've grabbed a pair of those. So I'm looking forward to having them set up and using them in our DJ setup, which we have, because we were very fortunate to purchase one of the Pioneer controllers, and I can't remember DJ or something, but it's very posh, and the speakers will finish that up very nicely.
Wonderful. Now, Pete, what have you been up to?
Oh, all sorts of things. We haven't mentioned that we haven't been on the airways.
Oh, I did. I didn't say why. Firstly, I was ill, fully besnotted, but now I'm fine. But also, Test Chamber. Project Test Chamber happened, but we'll circle back to that one.
There wasn't enough hours in the day. We just couldn't.
No.
We just couldn't do any podcasting, could we, at all?
Unfortunately not. But apart from the Test Chamber-related things, what have you got up to?
Oh, Test Chamber did sort of dominate.
Yeah.
I really can't. It's blotted out. It's like blotted out the sun. It was so. It was all I was thinking of, running up to the live performances, practicing, tweaking. Peaking, polishing, trying to get everything going. And then, I don't know, I've just got collapsed afterwards.
Yeah, I think I've only just recovered myself. The only other thing was I've ordered some supplies for getting the bike ready for winter. But no, let's talk about Project Test Chamber, the Modular Cafe Aldershot, ModCaf, Arts Council funded project of doom that's been going on since... I don't know, we've been planning it for like a year, more than a year, in fact.
Ian was saying closer to 2 years.
Most probably, because do you remember when we were in that place in Ash for a couple of meetings in the weird between COVIDs?
I didn't actually go to that place.
Ah. Well, those happened, and I think we had a meeting about it towards the end of those. Anyway, it happened. The live event was, I think, a massive success. Let me run you through what we did over the Saturday and Sunday just gone. As we record this, Saturday we had a modular cafe in the aeroplane shed of Q121 in Farnborough. We had, I think, somewhere between 80 to 100 attendees, which is at least double our best effort in the West End Centre. Lots of young faces, plenty of new faces, families. Our diversity was off the charts in comparison to usual, but it was fantastic engaging new friends and seeing people get stuck in on the Arturia stuff that I brought along and the blip blocks. We had a couple of blip blocks synths, which were great fun, and the usual couple of tech spots, little live things. It was wonderful and wholesome. Then the community collaboration session, which was, well, it defied all expectations. We had Daniel, the autism poet, collaborating with some of our Modular Cafe artists, and I didn't realise, but we had the only traditional Nepalese band outside of Nepal improvising with us, and we also had a bit of a jazz fusion with the electronics, and also a collaboration a little bit more remotely, but with the Farnborough Radio Society, which was pretty awesome. Finally, on the Saturday at least, half of the artists who recorded for the album performed their pieces, and it absolutely blew everybody away. Again, 100-odd people in the return circuit for that performance. It's wonderful. Sunday, there was a tour from the wonderful people at the Fast Museum, who also donated their time to support this project. There's a lot of history in that building, and 50 people would have enjoyed that. We then had a DIY session with help from the Surrey and Hampshire Makerspace community, as well as Gareth, PNP Modular, and Ben also helped out in that one. One of the other Bens, not this Ben. And a bunch of people soldered, often for the first time, I believe, in that group, a disintegrated crackle box from Racket, who also were amazingly supportive in that endeavour. That went off brilliantly. We then did something else. Yes, we had Void Null performing, which was brilliant because it was, in fact, Ian's idea to do something wild in the space way back when, and he kindly donated the idea of using the space to ModCaf. So Void Null did their show Collapse, local AV artist. You got to go check them out because they're awesome. And lastly, Adrian Utley and the rest of the Modular Cafe artists performed their pieces from the album to a sold-out crowd of somewhere around 200 people, and it was glorious. It was so inspiring, the amount of human excellence that made the event a success. Really, really heartwarming, and wonderful to just be around and laughing with all our friends all weekend, but exhausting. There are live recordings of practically everything. I've no idea what we're going to do with them, but we might hear some of that at some point when I've got them off the recorder. But there we are. I didn't perform, but Pete, you did.
Yes.
What was that experience like?
It went relatively well, and any mistakes I made wouldn't have been noticed by the audience because they don't know what they were listening to.
I think it went down very well.
Yes. No, I enjoyed it. I was glad I actually got a sound check.
Oh, yeah. It would have been a bit difficult otherwise.
Well, there was a threat that I wasn't going to get a sound
check. Oh, really? Were we a bit pressed for time at that point?
There was a point where I was told that the first X amount of people...
Oh, was it with the DI box moving around,
yes,
type thing?
We'd get one, and then another load of people wouldn't. And I sort of just looked at it in horror and said...
Barney, help.
Yeah, I need to... Yeah, and he pulled through.
Awesome.
And I did get my sound check. And I was just worried. It was the last thing I thought, you know, could it... You know what it's like. You've got to have some sort of check. I mean, it would have been ridiculous.
Absolutely.
It's just, I mean, I was listening to it in Cannes, so I could hear it in the headphones. And but that didn't help. And Anthony was saying the same thing.
Mm.
He said, I couldn't hear a damn thing.
Yeah. It's a challenging space. What was really cool over both evenings, since all the artists had 15 minutes-ish, including changeover, compared to the 8 for their recording, a lot of the pieces evolved quite a bit with extended intros, new sections and the like. Sam from Arturia's section had even more tension than the previous edition, which was super cool. And yours had extra bits too.
Yeah, a lot of them, actually. A lot of them. Well, I was able to meld all the stuff that I was previously preparing for the recording, and then had my sort of freak out and switching of tracks and going towards the other direction. I was able to integrate both pieces, and I was rather pleased with the outcome.
Absolutely. It was awesome.
Yes. And I got a good old applause like everyone else, which is always heartening.
Yeah. It was great to, I think... Because we all knew it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, that whole project. And I really do think we managed to convey that to the audience. I think they really felt how special and bizarre the whole experience was.
Yes. What did our friend Luke think of it all?
What did he see?
He said he had been there since 7:30 when I spoke to him.
Oh, no, he must have been at the evening one. Yes, he was.
Well, you were talking to him when I was just saying goodbye.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's all a blur. I can't quite remember what happened in a lot of places, to be honest. No, I thought he really enjoyed it because there was such a variety.
Yeah.
There was the super ambient, the slightly weird, and then the in-between. It went everywhere.
Yeah.
Something for everybody.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Lots of people have asked what next, which is worrying because how do you top it?
I don't know. Do you top it? Do you go to something a bit more low-key or...
No idea. I mean, we've still got the documentary to do, of course, and release the album digitally and on vinyl, of course.
Yes, there's still a hell of a lot to do before the whole project comes to its conclusion.
Absolutely. But I do think we've converted a lot more people who were saying, oh, what are you doing next? When can I come to something else? So, of course, we said, oh, 19th of October, West End Centre, that's the next Modular Cafe. So I'm hoping that we'll see a lot of new faces.
Well, I read most of Ian's email yesterday when he was thanking everybody, and I noted the various bits when he said there was someone that was over from America who was doing a...
Yeah.
Were they writing a book? book or doing a documentary on Modular or something like that.
I
so they
think
came along.
From what I heard, I mean, he showed me the business card sort of in the middle of one of the recordings. And I think he's doing research in sort of the modular synth community type world. So he'd just been at Bristronica on the Saturday and had come for the evening performance and had some interesting comments about the difference between sort of the two communities, where Bristronica is all about, you know, the gear, whereas what we were doing was all about the music and the people, which was brilliant to hear because that's exactly what we were trying to promote. You know, it's all about this community of people doing something absolutely wild.
So is Bristronica more of a trade show in some respects?
A little bit, because I mean, it is run by a shop and they get loads of brands in, but I think they do performances and workshops and stuff as well. It's not a soulless trade show, but I haven't been.
Are modular trade shows soulless?
No, I think broadly trade shows, yes. When you get to the weird corners of synthy stuff, nah, there's too many wacky characters for it to be soulless.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So while my list of saved tabs is kind of overflowing, we're not going to do all of those, but there are three interesting nuggets of news. Now, firstly, I'm going to go to a rather wonderful modular synthy maker that you have just patronised recently, Pete. Bastel Instruments. You've got their MIDI looper, I believe.
Yes, yes, I have.
They have added a third entry into the Castle range with the Castle ARP. So, suitably weird, same form factor as always with the little breadboard patch cable thingies. It is a little melody box, which is quite fun to go along with the experimental noise machine and the little fun drum thingy-majig. You have a quantized sine wave oscillator with a digital wave shaper, and you have a chord CV input, switching between chords, envelope generator, a triggered pitch input thing, which can let you make melodic variations, a bass output with the root note, voltage control over the clock, step voltage generator, which I think is part of the LFO. You have 8 and 16 step loop modes, standard AAA battery thing, and I want one. Of course I want one. I do miss my Castles. I want to get the Trio again one day.
You can't hang on to equipment for 5 minutes.
No, but I did have two Bastel Castles, and they were the last things I sold.
But they did go eventually.
They did go eventually, and I regret it. Shame. Anyway, it's Castle
better, Art. Better the love than lost than never loved at all.
There we go. So philosophical, but absolutely true. They were brilliant. They are brilliant, and I want them again. Nextly, Analog Solutions are at it again. Now, keep in mind, gentlemen, we must play Guess the Price. This guy is an 8-voice polysynth. I will show it to you in a moment, but let me read you some of the headline things. 8 voices in sort of, what is it, the Oberheim 8-voice format, where you have, you know, a full synth voice of controls replicated a bunch of times. Each one has 2 oscillators, 1 mixer, 3 filters, what? Okay. 2 ADSRs, a 16-step modulation sequencer thing, a BBD echo, white noise, sub-oscillator, and glide control. Do we really have... I need to get a bigger picture of one of these voices. Hang on. Really? 3 filters per voice? That seems strange.
Strange and excessive.
Too blurry.
Who's the designer of it? What was it?
Analog Solutions.
Ah, okay.
You know, the people that make the Colossus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this one is suitably massive as well. Okay, the triple filter situation is still a bit of a mystery. But there we are. There's also a master section with a voltage-controlled LFO and another normal LFO, a stereo mixer, 2 spring reverbs, so you can make those stereo, that's kind of cool, master control knobs, polyphonic MIDI to CV, a single multiple, and modulation routing control. You can also get a 61-key keyboard that kind of matches the thing. Here is the thing.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
Some of the memes had little ladders photoshopped into this picture, because obviously it is quite a hefty thing. Listeners, we're talking about kind of they're all horizontally arranged voices stacked on top of each other, so it becomes very tall. There is a ribbon controller in the keyboard attachment, which is quite cool. So, so there is kind of a launch price and then a regular price. We're going to go for the regular price. So the AS300, that's the main unit. Place your bets, folks. How many pennies do you reckon this bad boy is going to be?
I'm going to go ridiculous. 20 grand.
Okay, we've got 20 grand. Mark, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go slightly less than that. I think £14,478.
Very specific. And votes on the keyboard on its own. 61 keys, ribbon controller, a couple of knobs.
Is it just a controller?
I believe so. Let me just check. Yes, it has velocity. It is weighted, though it doesn't. It looks semi-weighted to me, so whatever.
1,500.
Cool. Mark?
I think I'm going to go a little bit higher, actually. So I'm going to go 2,500.
Okay, well, you're not too far off, generally. The main unit, your 8-voice polysynth, £22,500, and then £1,900 for the controller keyboard. Ouchie.
Yes.
There we are.
They've got a bit of a track record on this.
That is kind of just what they do, isn't it? Because, well, let's have a look. The original Colossus is 25,000, in fact.
It's gone up. It was 23, wasn't it?
It does seem so.
Inflation.
Yeah, and I mean, physically, you're getting a lot more synth for £3,000 more, because it is that kind of desk-sized lab thing, isn't it?
Well, that looks pretty big, the new one.
Yeah, well, there's no scale, actually. There isn't a picture of it with humans involved yet, so I'm not entirely sure.
Is there a picture of it with the keyboard?
Yeah, here's it with the keyboard.
And how many keys did we say it was?
61.
Okay, it's sort of not that wide. But it's
very tall.
Yes.
Yeah. Nearly a meter tall, could it be?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I want to hear it. But as far as I can tell, there aren't any sound demos yet.
But it sounds massive.
It better do with, was it 16 oscillators, something like that? Yeah. Cool. Now, are you ready to poke fun at things?
Yes.
Good, because it's Roland time, because they're always the culprits these days, because they're Roland. Anyway, what, in your opinion, both of you guys, is the worst modern Roland synthesizer? And by modern, I mean, just, you know, not a vintage thing that's actually good.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, because I have my opinion on this, but you know what it is. So, Mark, yeah. What do you reckon?
Surely it's got to be one of the Behringer.
No, Roland ones, though. Roland built.
Haven't Behringer done any copies of the Rolands?
Yeah, many. But this is
official Roland stuff,
right,
of their modern releases.
I don't even know any of their modern releases.
Oh, lucky you. They're not worth knowing.
Okay,
so they have redesigned and re-released the Gaia, the SH-1 Gaia thing with the horrible plasticky aliasing piece of arse. It's so bad.
Well, Korg is still doing the Micro Korg.
What's the... There's the Novation Mini Nova. Ew.
Mini Nova. No, I had one of those. It was... I
would be very, very disappointed in you if you had thought... Oh, yeah.
Can't remember.
You know
the
what?
Name sounds very...
There were some that were Nova-related that I think were good. The Mini Nova and potentially the Ultra Nova were both Micro Korgy things. Let me just check them out.
Mark, didn't you have one of those? Didn't you have something in Ed's studio? Did it?
Well, it still exists. It's the Novation Supernova.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. And there's also the base station that they...
Yeah,
base station is good.
Yeah, I had the Mark
quite
one.
Fancy one of those.
Yeah, they're great. I think it's the same technology as the sort of Peak Summit. I think, isn't it the Oxford oscillators and etc. in those in the base stations? The Mark II, anyway.
Might be. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, the Supernova. Yeah, great. Ultra Nova and Mini Nova, definitely not bad.
Yeah, I don't know why they. I mean, the original guy was out for ages.
Yeah, well, while I was still at the shop, it was always there in the corner because the Roland rep wouldn't let us kill it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Horrible thing.
Yeah, so, you know, the Gaia 2 is here. And in this particular news article, I couldn't help but laughing and then becoming very angry when it says, Roland Gaia 2 follows the best-selling Gaia polysynth. People actually bought it. Gross. Anyway, so this guy is basically just another, you know, digital synth in a box that will sound exactly the same as all their other ones. They are claiming it's not just the Zen Core stuff. It's a newly developed hybrid engine, but it's all digital.
I briefly started watching a demonstration. I think it might have been...
There's a Sonic State one with
Sonic
Nick Batten
State, yes.
Cast.
And I got bored really quickly. And
of course you did.
Yeah.
So maximum of 22 voices and 3 oscillators per voice. I mean, at least it is very knobby. There's lots of hands-on control, which is nice. And there's an XY pad.
I don't think there's anything that Roland currently make or will likely be currently making or will likely be making in the future that could excite me. I just can't think of anything.
The D05 Boutique. That was good.
Okay. And what was that? What copy?
It was the D50.
Yeah, it could be identical. It's a digital synth.
Exactly.
So it was a D50, really,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, that's what it was. That was cool. And discontinued, obviously.
Yeah. Quite a lot of the... boutiques, well, they're all digital, aren't they? But I mean, quite a lot are emulating other digital, so they, you know, what can you get wrong? No, there's quite a lot that, yeah, we'll give it house from.
Another day poking fun at Roland.
System 8, for instance.
Oh, yeah. I think it has its fans. I didn't hate the layout.
No,
it was friendly to program.
Yes.
That is all I'll give it. But it was aggressively green.
Yeah, they did have that green period, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, what was
well,
the...
Well, I bought all of those. I had the 808, Mark. The 303, and the VT3 as well, which were quite good fun, but they were soon sold and something more.
That was the Ira range. That's what they called it.
That was it, yeah. And it lit up like a Christmas tree. But the only thing that I do still own is the VT3, which is the voice transformer, which is quite good fun, really. It's it does sort of come out every once in a while. But
to be fair, there's not many products in that category apart from the VT4.
Exactly.
And some
the VT4's the new
not
one.
I don't think it's as good.
Okay. Oh, you've got one as well, Pete.
I've got the VT3.
Yeah, I guess that's where the rack.
Well,
addicts.
I saw yours.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the robot button. I thought,
sold.
I think that was software. I think that was actually some software. I can't remember. I can't remember how it was done, but it was for some reason. I think it's software rather than
the intro for.
Yeah, I think it was.
Addicts.
Yeah, I think it was some plugin.
Okay.
Possibly. I can't remember. It's been 4 years.
It actually has. That's terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. It has. The other one. What's the one they brought out? The kind of groove boxy sound source.
Oh, yes, that one. The one they had, the small one and the big one.
No, that's the MC101 and MC707.
You're thinking of.
No, the really thing that was released really recently, and it's got multi-engines, and it's like a kind of sound source.
Didn't they step into the world of modular as well? Didn't they bring out some...
There was an IRA. There were some modules and then a system in the IRA range.
Okay.
And they also re-released the System 100, which they gave over to Malaco Heavy Industries to do the design for. And they...
God, about that.
In theory, you can still buy them.
Yeah. They didn't... I don't remember them selling much.
No, they didn't sell very much. They seemed awfully expensive. I don't know why, because many Eurorack modules are way more expensive. But yeah, it was too late. Mm. They'd done it years before.
Yeah.
Way too late.
But not very good.
Mm.
No, not very exciting.
The SH4D, I think, is the one you might have been talking about, the Groovebox thing.
That's exactly the one I'm
talking
about.
There was a Loopop video on it, I remember, and it was kind of fine.
Passable.
Yeah. It works. And you get a lot of sounds, which is cool.
Yeah, I mean... To be honest, like a lot of people, I've got equipment overload.
Lucky you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's most probably because I swim in the fucking stuff. Anyway, I don't have lost all track of what we were talking about.
Yeah, so have I, but that's the fun. We're just rambling.
Yeah, well, a lot of this will stay in.
Sorry, Gaz, didn't mean to poke fun at Roland so much, but he actually had no Roland at all for his live performance Test Chamber.
He had one of those CK...
Yeah, one of the Yamaha pianos, as well as two Electrons and an Arturia Mini Freak, used to excellent effect, I might add.
Yes.
Check him out on the album eventually.
Unfortunately, he had a few technical issues, but he got a chance of a rerun at the end, which was good.
Yeah, I would have been so gutted if he hadn't managed to resolve that one. But he had his extended intro, which was really cool, and then it just didn't quite flow into the next bit. But when it did, I think it might have been Rod who described it as triumphant. When he finally got that one happening, it was glorious.
Yeah, I was absolutely gutted that I couldn't make it down there. I mean, it was there was other things going on, but it sounded like a fantastic day. Really upset I didn't get to experience all of the
You
greatness.
Will be able to with some video content and, of course, the big old documentary at the end, which we may, I think the plan is to screen it in a cinema with Dolby Atmos. So you're going to be down here for that. We'll never forgive you.
So there was a videographer
there
for the performances, I'm sure.
Yeah, so Nigel was around doing lots of video stuff, as well as members of the community getting some handy video too.
You tend to find that you ignore all the sort of videographers and photographers that are floating around because you're so concerned about...
And that suits them just fine. They don't want you looking into the lens.
No, it'd look a bit kind of break that fourth wall
type
of stuff.
Exactly. Can't have that. No way.
Fair enough. I'll be interested. When do you think we'll see some of that content?
Well, because we've got a while to go before documentary and album come out, we need to keep that momentum going. So the plan is to, you know, keep sort of feeding bits out.
Dribble it out.
Yeah, while we can.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's time to roll on to our next segment, the last segment, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Nice one. I'm going to go first because it's fresh on my brain and I've shown Mark and Pete and it's quite fun. So we're on YouTube. We're on a YouTube channel, Vengeant, or Vengent, or Vengent, who knows. V-E-N-J-E-N-T, a drum and bassy kind of artist man, and I first came across him with a short called Working From Home, where he is making sounds by dragging a table and chair across the floor, and it's good fun, and I believe he's made it into a full track. But there is also First Day at Work, which is a good short, but that got turned into a full track called Hammer at Home, that is the latest release. And Mark, what was the thing you were describing about the kind of sounds he was doing with the furniture? He said, it's a bit of a trope, but a certain style.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be quite a trend, or there was a trend, you know, a couple of years ago, yeah, with this kind of foghorn sounding bass, which that's what that particular video reminded me of. But it was huge, and you either liked it or you didn't like it. Yeah. I wasn't the biggest fan,
yeah,
but it was very, very popular within the scene. It's kind of died off a little bit now, but it does exist in different guises still, so that's why I kind of enjoyed the video that you showed me today.
Nice one. Well, if that floats your boat, Vengeant on YouTube. Who's next? Pete, you ready to go?
Yes, I'm going to be really lazy this week.
Oh no.
So I've been enjoying the new Star Wars series on Disney Plus, which is Ahsoka, and I shall be watching episode 8 possibly this evening after we finish the podcast.
Another one in kind of the same, obviously the same universe, but kind of filling in around the Mandalorian stuff.
Yes, to a degree, but it's taken from the Clone War cartoon type stuff that they did, and then they've brought it into real characters, real world actors.
Nice.
And it's I would say it's almost predictable, but it's easy watching because there's nothing challenging, because it's so broad based for the scope of the audience, from really quite young children all the way through. So, and it's not challenging. That's what I'm trying to say. You kind of predict what's going to happen. But, you know, it looks very shiny, very good special effects. It's sort of
all the cinematography that they've developed through the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's feature film quality stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
it's very enjoyable.
Yeah. And apparently, I'm told by some of these YouTube channels that talk about the news about what's coming up, that the series will end and go into a feature film, actually queue up a feature film. Well, I'm not sure whether they've gone into production for that film or not.
Sounds like they're trying to kind of get into the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe scale of stuff happening.
Of course they do. It's all Disney, isn't it? Marvel's Disney as well.
Of course, I forgot about that. I forgot Disney owned everything now.
Yes.
Weird.
So they're just maximising on the investment.
Yeah.
Why not? If they can, you know, people watch that stuff.
Mm.
And it's primarily directed for the streaming service. It's not, I mean, you say feature films will potentially go into cinema, but streaming is such a big part of people's consumption of that type of media.
Yeah.
So all the time they've got a streaming platform, they've just got to keep pumping this stuff out.
Absolutely. Nice one. Mark, take us away.
No YouTube channels to promote, so slightly controversial here, but I think the last time I was on here I was promoting a new release that I have on my record label.
I think that's allowed.
And funny enough, it's happening again. So last week we had a new artist to the label called The Fifth, and shout to Phil, who's just done a new single project for the label, on the main label. And that's called Epos, and that is now available exclusively through Beatport and Spotify. So if you like your mature drum and bass face melters, I highly recommend going and having a listen to that. So that's available now on my record label, Cause for Concern Recordings.
Wonderful. And that's Epos, E-P-O-S, and The Fifth is stylized F-I-5-T-H.
Correct.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Well, what a pleasure to have a triple Rack Addict extravaganza. Thank you for bearing with us while we were ill and or busy, and we hope you join us again for the next episode. Farewell!